Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks, Laura Fox. It's John Kenny here for Marie this week. It's Wednesday, the 27th of October. This is Game On here on RTÉ 2FM. Coming up, Davy Fitzgerald on an interesting crossroads in his coaching career.
There was a sense, though, wasn't there, that you had the job in the bag? And did you think you had the job in the bag?
Maybe. I thought it was going to go at one stage, yeah. But you know what, Ryan, if it's not meant for you, it's not meant for you, and you just move on. And I'm that type of person, you know. So there's no problem. There's so many things ahead of me that I'm looking forward to next year. Can't wait.
In motorsport, I'll catch up with the karting success story that is Alex Cobey as she moves away through the ranks. Plus, Jeff Shepherd will bring us his weekly eye on America as Tom Brady breaks yet another record.
Evans, 600 innings.
I've never heard of 600 in anything in football, but Brady has it with a strike to Evans over the middle using his size. And how good is that 600, Jim?
Tom Brady throwing his 600th career touchdown on Sunday, and then the ball was thrown into the crowd and the guy gave the ball back. Strange. We'll find out about that a little later on, plus all the rest of the news of the day. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. That's 51552. Or you can tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
And a very good evening to you. Well, earlier I caught up with the former Wexford hurling manager and almost Galway manager, Davy Fitzgerald. He was doing media today to promote the return of Ireland's fittest family. It's on this coming Sunday on RTÉ television. And I began by asking him how much he enjoyed shooting the latest series.
I always do, John. When you're involved with your club team or your county team in hurling, this is a welcome distraction. And you know what? It's a totally different environment. The pressure is still there because your families are dependent on you to give them as much help as possible. But I absolutely love it. The minute I hear we're going filming it or we're on, I get a tingle in my tummy and I'm ready for road. And it's a very special program, and it's one I really enjoy doing.
Are you surprised by its success?
So let me put it to this way. When we went and pitched this idea, we got a 15-minute slot in RTÉ. They gave us 15 minutes, but we were still there 2 hours later, right? And I can remember the production company, Animo, I went with, said, "Davey, if we get a year or two of this, we'd be doing well." We're there 9 years later. I'm absolutely chuffed and I'm thrilled. The biggest thing that makes me happy, and I have to be honest, is you could sit at home and watch this with your kids. You can watch it with your own parents. It hits every generation. We've had people in their 60s compete, 50s, 40s, 30s, 20s, in their teens. This hits so many generations. And, John, to me, the most important thing in life is your family, to sit down and watch TV with them or to compete on the show. It ticks the boxes, so I'm immensely proud. I'm really proud of what it's done.
Yeah, the plus from you is that you have a good voiceover, as with Darren Maloney, and the production values are very good as well. And it needs to be of a high production value in this day and age as well, doesn't it?
Oh, listen, the production company, like, I'm with Animo for a long time and Kite, and they take this so serious. Like, the amount of guys we have on set is absolutely, you think there might be a cameraman and a soundman. Man, you could have 20, 30 different people on that set, like, and they're very conscious of their jobs. Like, I don't think people at home realize how serious the camera guys, the sound guys, the producers, how much they take. They really work hard on what to do, and I value what they do now way more. They're brilliant people. So it's just not turn up there and let's go film them for a few hours. It's 13 or 14 hours a day, 15 hours sometimes. Do you know what? I love it. Absolutely love it.
Isn't it funny, actually, people who actually got a sneak behind the scenes of what we actually do for a living suddenly give us more respect, which is great.
I didn't understand it myself. Like, to break down stuff, to edit stuff, like, I know you could be editing stuff there for hours and hours just to get maybe a 20-minute clip or a 10-minute clip. It could take you hours to get it. It's a serious job. People don't realize what goes into programming. Like, I know to edit the stuff in Fittest Family takes months and months and months. And people have to sit in that room and people I think is thrown together, be it radio, be it TV, it's not thrown together. It's you understand the work that goes in, and fair play to the people. They provide us with that entertainment, and it doesn't come easy.
Of course, you have much more time now to do Ireland's Fittest Family now that you're not going to be involved in intercounty hurling. Just as an aside then, you said to the Late Late Show that you thought you had the job, but it didn't happen. Disappointed in Galway?
Yeah, listen, I have a lot of free time. Now, the only good thing is Lundus are doing a big competition there with Fittest Family to put, they're pawning me out there to do a coaching session with a school or a club, any club at all. So I'm looking forward to that. So that'll happen. Listen, as I said in the late the other night, Galway rang, I did have a chat to them. They decided to go to Henry. That's it. It's move on, Davey. There's no bitterness, no anthem. And just what's going to be in life, John, will be, you know. If we do it, there's a lot of stuff out there in life, John, that's really worth worrying about. I don't know if something like this deserves that amount of time.
Yeah, but obviously you said that you thought you had it, so you obviously thought that it was a job that would have suited you, would it?
Yeah, listen, it's fucking 45 minutes up the road. It would have been handy. Like, that was one of the things appealing. They have a lot of talent, won a lot of underage. They have guys that won Ireland a few years ago. Of course it was worth a chat and a talk, and have no regrets about that whatsoever. None. But it is what it is, and I've moved on from it, and there'll be other challenges out there now, John, that I'm going to look forward to.
Yeah. Henry, obviously, is his first big gig, really. How do you think he's going to do?
If we look at Henry, right, his hurling career was immense. Did exceptionally well, got the best out of himself, one of the all-time greats. Then he went on to manage Ballyhale. Like, even to go straight into your club and manage them, I don't think he'd managed too many other teams before that. So he went in and did really well with this. Now he's going to the next level. Like, it's grand being a pundit, and it's good, and it's grand, but Henry likes to be in the arena, and this is the next step. It will be probably a bit harder than he's come across, but he has the material with him there in Galway to do pretty well, and he'll be disappointed if he doesn't. But I'm sure it won't faze him, John. This task won't faze him. He's used to high expectation, and he'll deal with that. He knows what he's going into, so he will, and he'll surround himself with good people, which is important.
What about yourself? Are you going to continue with management, or?
Yeah, well, I was with my own. We got knocked out myself about a week ago. Yeah, with Six Mile Bridge. I don't actually know, John, what's ahead, man, as regards to GA World. I have other projects. Like, I have Davey's Toughest Teams coming back in February next year, filming. I'll probably have Fittest Family next year. I have one or two things privately. My uncle's farm, which I've neglected. Like, John moved in with me 4 years ago with Parkinson. So I have to get stuck into his farm. He absolutely loved that, so I have to do a bit more down there. So I won't be idle anyhow, John, I put it to you like that.
Yeah, there is other priorities in life, and despite what Shankly has said, it's not a matter of life and death. But, you know, it's obviously been a part of your life, being at intercounty level for the last couple of decades. So it's got to be difficult, isn't it, going to be sitting on the sideline watching the All-Ireland series unfurl?
Yeah, it's since 1989, John, I've been involved at senior level, between playing and managing. It's been a long time. Maybe the breeder will do me no harm, learn a few more things from a few more sports. I don't know how I'm going to react to it. I don't know. I'll have enough of things out there to distract me, but when I was a young kid, growing up, all I wanted to do was play for Six Mile Bridge and Clare, and I got to live that dream for a long, long time, you know, and for a long management. But now, just go back to looking at it, see how that goes. And I don't know what's ahead, John. Try and keep the health good if I can. And there's other challenges that we might take on. And you'd never know in the future, maybe something will pop up again. I don't know.
Sure. In reference to the West Wexford job, obviously there was a lot of travelling involved in that. That must have taken its toll.
Oh, Jesus, I'll tell you, it was tough. Like, you're leaving out maybe one in the day and you're pulling back into Six Mile Bridge, maybe one at night. It was a long journey, but I have to say to you, I don't have one regret. The way the people and supporters treated me when I walked down Wexford, the street, it was just immense. Lovely people, genuine. If you had a loss, they wouldn't cut your throat. Like, that's very rare now. You would normally get a lot of abuse in different places. They didn't. They weren't like that. And I wish other counties would take a leaf out of their book. They were incredible supporters, said I will. The way the players were, like my family, a lot of them guys. Are you going to keep 36 fellas happy the whole time, John? If you have to pick a team of 15, you're not going to keep 36 fellas happy, so you're not. But I have to say, I have met a lot of friends there that still ring me. A lot of the lads, a few of them have rang me up recently, even last week. And it's great. So on county board, I couldn't have dealt with a better. They backed me. Even when I might have given out about one or two things and it's all over the papers, they back you. But they got the results. And I think that's what I'm about, whatever story is there. So my time in Wexford, I'll look back and I'll smile. And that's not a bad thing to say, John.
Yeah, and then in terms of looking at the future, then you're talking about looking after the farm and obviously Ireland's Fittest Family with Londis and all the other projects you're involved in as well. What about a bit of punditry, television, radio? Is that in the pipeline?
RT haven't been on to me yet. I know, haven't heard a word from
them. You never know when they hear this, they might.
listen, we'll see what comes. I love looking at the game and analysing the game, and I love even seeing things that other people mightn't see. I want to see what way are they setting up shape-wise, what type of game are they playing, is there holes in different places that you can exploit. Like, I love looking at that, and I'm going to continue to do that anyhow if I can. If the punditry happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm not really bothered. If it does, fine. If it doesn't, fine. I think I'll be doing a bit of work with the Mirror anyhow. But you know what I enjoyed, John, was going to the different games. Like in Cusick Park, I would go to the same place always nearly. I go behind the goals. It's very highly elevated. I sit down on my own nearly. And the amount of stuff I can see from that position, I actually love just going to the games.
Yeah.
And seeing different things. And kind of looking forward even to doing a bit more of that before the year is out. Even though we're out, I'll probably still go and look at a few of the games. And it's a nice thing to be able to do. But normally I would be going to games thinking we're going to be playing this team soon, or we're going to be playing that team soon. That's not going to happen for a while.
So in terms of, and finally, next year, can anybody knock Limerick? They look very, very strong, don't they?
Well, listen, I think they're an incredible team. The way they play is incredible. The way they're coached and managed. Their physicality, their smartness on the ball. Of course, another team is going to come. Will it be this next year or the year after? I'm not sure. But teams are going to have to change how they play a small bit. Limerick will be hard to beat in the next year or two. But time will change. As the great Kilkenny team maybe saw the late 2000s, like there's a lifespan in everything, and it will change. And who's going to be the team to do it? Who wants to be the next team to do it? Limerick are going to enjoy it. They're going to stay there for as long as they can. And it's hard to see in the next year or two they've been taken off that.
Right. So when does Irish Fittest Family come to our screens then?
So Ireland's Fittest Family is starting on Sunday evening, next Sunday evening. So it is, I think it's around 6:30 is the normal time. And all I'd say to you about it is there's a lot of ups and downs in it this year. I can remember a race where I hit behind bales. I couldn't even watch it. It was unbelievable just with something happening. And then there was a race I was involved in. And if I could have gone and hit myself, I'd have gone and hit. So I would have. Listen, you're going to enjoy it. It's epic, and there's a few new events in it as well. So tune in on Sunday evening. I think very important. And I also have to say a big thank you to Londis. They've backed us for the last 3 years. They sponsored the show, and fair play to them. So you can't get any place unless you have people being prepared to put their hand in their pocket and support us. So thanks, a big thanks to them. But looking forward to it now and see how it goes.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Davey. Best of luck at the Ireland's Fittest Family and also your future endeavours, and good luck down the farm too.
Thanks, John. Thank you. Bye. Take care of yourself.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, there's only a handful of Irish motor racing drivers competing on the international level. Our top driver undoubtedly is Craig Breen, who's just signed a 2-year deal to compete with the M Sport Ford team at the World Rally Championship. But away from rallying, what about circuit racing? Well, some like Matt Griffin from Cork and Charlie Eastwood from Belfast are making a living in sports cars. But where's our next single-seater superstar going to come from? Well, will it be from Newbridge? Teenager Alex Kobe, who is working her way through the karting records and also through the ranks as well in a male-dominated sport, joins me now. Good evening to you, Alex.
Hi.
How are you? Good, good.
I'm good, how are you?
Haven't seen you in a while. Met you in Drogheda last year, wasn't it, when you were working your way up through a karting session. How has things gone for you since?
Really good. A lot of travelling going on since then.
So you were in Adria in Italy over the weekend at the IAMIA Warriors final. Tell us a bit about that. What is that?
So throughout the year, a lot of drivers have been competing to get a ticket to this competition, which is quite high. There was over 340 competing. It would have been my third year going to World Finals, but this year I think was going to be a big deal after doing so much racing in Europe. It's quite a big event and I was so honoured to be there and, you know, representing all Irish drivers and especially female drivers.
You're in the IAMI X30 Seniors event. You finished ninth overall. But there was a lot of competitors in that. You were obviously happy finishing in the top 10, were you?
Yeah, I was absolutely delighted. It's obviously quite hard to compete against all those different countries and all the talent across the world. But we put up a good fight and I think the whole country did quite well over the week.
Yeah, there's quite a few Irish drivers there, wasn't there, competing? Daniel Kelleher was one. Richie Faulkner, I know he's not actually a young man anymore, but Ty Buckley, grandchild of rally ace Ger Buckley, people like that as well. So there was a nice crop of Irish young drivers, including yourself, involved over the weekend.
Yeah, poor Kelleher nearly got it as well. He nearly won the finals. Got caught in the last corner, bless him.
Yeah, and in your particular section, the X30 Seniors, how did you work your way through to the final? Was there a series of heats, semi-finals, finals, that kind of thing?
So the weekend was built up with qualifying on the Wednesday, which was put into three groups as the class is quite big. So we'd have our qualifying, then would lead on to five heats, which would give us our position for the finals. There was three sets of finals and thankfully, I came ninth in one of them. So it was a great weekend overall, quite difficult, but it was amazing.
As I can imagine. I don't know that circuit, Adria Karting Raceway in Italy. What's it like?
It's quite fast. It was my first time there as well, but it's amazing. Like just even being able to travel into that side of Italy was beautiful, but the track itself consists of a bit of everything from other tracks. You know, you have your chicanes, quite a few hairpins and long straight. So the first straight would have been really quick and then the first corner is flat out as well. So the starts were quite hard and quite messy. But the track itself was absolutely amazing to drive.
I can imagine. Just to let people know about karting. Karting basically is where younger drivers start, like yourself, who've got hopes of moving their way up through the motorsport ranks. They would move out of karting into single-seater racing, maybe Formula 4, maybe Formula 3, and upwards and onwards, hopefully into Formula 1. But that gateway seems to be closed for the moment. How many years do you think you will be doing karting before you look at perhaps looking at single-seater racing like Formula 4?
At the moment, we're looking at racing again in Europe and at home next year, but also we're looking forward to maybe having an opportunity of racing GT cars in the US, which will be alongside like BMW, alongside Porsche, Lamborghini, Ferrari, Aston Martin, all those big branded cars. But hopefully we'll get a bit of testing racing in the US, kind of see where we go from there. Hopefully, as I've spoken about before, lead my way to the W Series, which is the single-seater platform that I'm hoping to get on, which is an F3 car. And the Formula Female, is going to help me kind of get my way up there too. So W Series would be an all-female platform.
Yeah, just to let people know, the W Series is an all-female motor racing series, and Formula Female was set up by Nikki Daly, the Irish international hockey player, wasn't it? She's your manager too, isn't she?
yeah, Nikki is alongside me for the past few years when it comes to training, and just bringing alongside a lot of opportunities for myself. She's been a huge help for me for the past few years, and I'm so grateful for her. And the things that she's doing for women in motorsports has been amazing, especially with the former female, just introducing a lot of girls to the sport that didn't think they could compete.
Yeah, because one of the initiatives, isn't it, is to get as many people, young girls as well, sitting in a kart and to go kart racing. She's done for thousands of people, and maybe through that process you can find a couple like yourself, more like yourself, who'd be interested in maybe making a career of it.
Yeah, the past year or two it's been great to see a lot of young girls giving it a go, kind of going to a track, having an eye out for what's going on, and some of the girls have actually went on to compete this year, which has been great to see, because obviously when I started there wasn't many girls at all, and now you're seeing girls in the younger categories really giving the lads a go for their money.
Yeah. Nikki, just to expand on where she's actually been an engineer for Juncos Racing, hasn't she, in the United States of America, and that's where her tie-in with perhaps you going to look at GT racing in the States.
Yeah, Nikki spent a good while over in the States engineering for a few of the teams, and she came home to play hockey and finally made it to the Olympics this year, which was amazing for her. It was a delight to see her go on. And
absolutely, yeah. And of course, she's a silver medalist from the World Championships as well. You told me in that piece I did for the 6-1 News last year that a lot of the avenues here are kind of closed, that if you want to move up the ladder here in Ireland, a lot of avenues in terms of getting a single-seater season are kind of closed. Is that still the way? Do you still feel that way?
It's hard to say, to be honest. I think with the way that things are going for me and racing in Europe and hopefully going to the US, I feel like I catch a lot of people's eyes, hopefully, and a lot of those doors will open for me to figure out whether it's single-seaters or GT cars that I want to continue my professional career with.
You're still very young, you're a teenager. What are you, 16 still?
17.
17 now. Happy birthday. When was that?
June,
all right.
Thank you.
So, right throughout the summer. So you're 17 now. So you're in very much, as you say yourself, in a male-dominated sport, although there's a lot more girls involved in the karting. How is that perceived? Rosemary Smith down the years found it very difficult when she was rallying or racing back in the 60s, 70s. How are you finding it in a male-dominated world?
Growing up, it was quite difficult, but I think the fact that I've been around for a long time and I've, you know, done a lot with the sport, that the boys don't really look at me as, you know, they don't look down on me. Mm. More so they look at me as competition now.
Well, they're looking up the road at you now, aren't they, of course?
Yeah, they're looking at the back of my helmet.
Which is a good thing as well. So, listen, a good weekend at the IAMI Warriors final as well, 9th in the final, which was a terrific result for you in the tide in the top 10. What's next for you over the next couple of months?
Next couple of months, I think we're having I think next month we'll be doing the last round of the MI Championship, and then we'll be hopefully trying to figure out a bit of car testing, so I can get the grips before I go over to the US. Over the winter, we'll probably do a few races over in England as stuff kind of calms down around here in the country.
Yeah. And what form would that take in the UK?
Or the Winter Cup, sometimes that'd be on, or just a few of the club rounds over in England.
Just to get the feel, you know, for the circuits.
It's quite cold over there, so you have to learn your way around the cold tracks and the weather.
Well, listen, it's great that you're actually making progress now, Alex. 17 years of age, still very, very young, so plenty of time in front of you. You've got a very good manager in Nikki Daly as well, and hopefully she can open a few doors for you over the next couple of years as well, and we can see you step-laddering your way to success in world motorsport. Alex Colby, thanks for joining us here on Game On here on 2FM. I in America, Jeff is with us next.
Game On on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
The man open left. Game On, I in America.
Evans, 600 innings.
I've never never heard of 600 in anything in football, but Brady has it with a strike to Evans over the middle using his size. And how good is that 600, Jim?
600 passes, Jeff Shefford, touchdown passes. Good evening to you, buddy. Hi in America. How are you getting on?
I'm doing great, John. How are things going?
Okay, so Yates gets the ball, tosses it into the crowd. One happy spectator sits there, realizing he's got the golden egg, and then gives the ball back.
I mean, literally and figuratively, that's great. I mean, he's got the goose that lays the golden egg, right?
Yeah. You know, so that's worth millions, that ball.
So he you know, I think Mike Evans doesn't realize like what he just did, that he gave away the football. You know, I mean, first off, I mean, it could go to the Hall of Fame. Mike Evans could have kept it. It could have been worth something. But obviously, you know, he would want Tom Brady to get it. And so the man who got the ball after a couple of minutes of negotiating with the team, he gave the football back. Now, we'll circle back to what that means in a minute. But here's what he's going to get from Tom Brady, okay? He's going to get two Tom Brady signed jerseys and a signed helmet. He's going to get a signed Mike Evans jersey and his game cleats. He's going to get $1,000 store credit at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers team store. And he's going to get season tickets for 2 years, okay? So, I mean, so that's not a terrible haul,
isn't
right?
Isn't he getting a Bitcoin as well?
And Tom Brady's going to give him a Bitcoin, too.
Which
okay?
is worth $62,000.
Right. So yeah. All total, this pot of, you know, gifts and cryptocurrency is worth about $100,000. But it turns out that if he'd have kept the football and, just put it up for auction, there are estimates that he could potentially have gotten somewhere around $500,000 for the football. Now, look, I mean, you know, what is the old, you know, bird in the hand better than two in the bush, and you don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth and all the other cliches, you know. But, I mean, it's still pretty cool. And the guy even said he'd like to play a round of golf with Tom Brady.
Yeah,
now,
that
I don't
was
know
the
if
one
that's
thing I was
going
to Will Brady play golf with this guy? Really?
Right.
No?
Oh, I don't know.
I think he owes him a round of golf.
I think he does too, but I guarantee you it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's not going to happen until maybe the off season, or maybe he's retired, you know, sometime in 2032 or something like that.
All right.
Valdez just trying to fight so. This one is a rocket into left-hand drive.
What's that? Are we talking about, I don't know where that came from.
Sorry, that was my computer, I apologize.
Sorry, no problem. Was that World Series stuff?
It was the World Series.
I was wondering, yeah. Atlanta and the Braves with the Astros, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a professional transition there, boys and girls. That was a good job. That was not scripted. Yeah, so the Braves won last night. And look, you know, John, they jumped out top of the first inning. They're on the road. And their leadoff batter, Soler, hits a home run to lead off the World Series. I mean, you can't script it anything better. And they scored 5 runs in the first 3 innings, and they hold on. You know, so there's just so many subplots to all this stuff. I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, the Houston Astros obviously embroiled in that cheating controversy a couple of years ago with, you know, beating on the trash cans and whether or not the players were wearing devices to signal pitches and all this other stuff. So, you know, there's a real small contingent of people in Houston, you know, which is a city of about 4 million people. So it's not like it's real small, but it's a huge city, you know, that's pulling for the Astros. And I think most people are probably pulling for the Braves, though, just a casual fan, because just about everybody's heard about the Astros cheating. So game 2 is tonight, still in Houston, and we'll see how it goes from here.
Yeah. Braves, they were being pushed to change their name, weren't they?
Yeah, so they're kind of in that mix with the Cleveland Indians, who are going to be retiring that name, or have retired it now, I guess, after this season. They're going to change their name to the Cleveland Guardians, obviously. You know, we've talked about this before. You're a fan of the Washington professional football team, which formerly was the Redskins, you know. And so, but it, as of now, there hasn't been really any movement from the Braves of potentially either changing their name or changing any of the other, you know, kind of American Indian kind of, you know, logos and things that they do in and around the stadium. But that could, you know, that could change at some point.
Now, just want to go back to the NFL. Tomorrow night, it's the Packers against Arizona. Match of the teams, 6-1 and 7-0, respectively. 1-6, loss 1, but 7-0 means you're undefeated. First place in the NFC, playoff hunt on the line there. Green Bay could be without Devontae Adams. COVID issues here, I'm hearing.
Yeah, so he hasn't come out and said it, but he's being treated as though he is vaccinated. He's not having to go through unvaccinated player protocols, so you know you kind of have to, you know, put two and two together there. But he has, you know, as we all know, even though you do get the vaccine, you can still test positive for the virus. So he is in that situation. So what has to happen is he has to have two negative tests in consecutive days over a 48-hour period. So he would have had to test negative today and test negative tomorrow. I don't pretend to be a immunologist or a scientist, so I'm not exactly sure what the probability of is that's happening. But they've also, the Packers have also ruled out Alan Lazard, who was in close contact with Adams. And so they'll be out really with, you know, without their top two receivers as they go play this game. And, you know, it's rare that you have a matchup kind of this late in the season on a Thursday night with the, you know, two teams with this record, John. You know, I mean, this is a really important football game to be played on such a short week. And then you have to throw in all this COVID stuff, too. You know, the Packers kind of threw up a goose egg in week one against the Saints. And I don't know how much of that Aaron Rodgers summer drama was involved in all that. But they have completely bounced back and have won six in a row. And, you know, again, as you mentioned, the Cardinals are undefeated. Kyler Murray has just been playing MVP level football through the first month and a half of the season.
Yeah, I was just checking in on the health and well-being of the Chiefs quarterback. He got a fairly old smack in the head, didn't he?
Yeah.
How is he?
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he got hit from behind and was falling forward. And as he was falling forward, a player was running at him and kneed him in the head. So not only did he just take the knee to the head, his back bent back weird. He was real wobbly coming off the field in a really, you know, bad performance for the Chiefs against the Tennessee Titans the other day. They scored just 3 points, this high-flying offense that, you know, has wowed football fans for the better part of 3 years. They really played poorly. He was wobbly. I would think he'll be good to go this week when they play, but they're, you know, they haven't officially, you know, made any determinations just yet. But there's something going on there, and it's not good in Kansas City. They've got some defensive issues, and again, just really struggled to move the football last Sunday.
There's one thing I was noticing during the week as well, when I was looking at some reruns. Some stadia aren't full. A lot of the stadiums are, obviously, but some aren't. Is the protocols still in place for some stadia at the NFL?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about location. I mean, you know, I went to the first, the Saints have only played one home game at home in New Orleans this year. They'll play their second one this Sunday against the Bucs. But, you know, you had to wear a mask into the stadium. You had to show your proof of vaccination. It's getting to that point in most of the country. I mean, you know, Florida's wide open, you know, a bunch of other places, Texas, you know, the Tennessee Stadium, you know, Kansas City, those places are pretty wide. Now, look, some of it has to do with the fact that, you know, just some teams aren't very good already and their fans are not showing up. So well, there's a little bit of COVID.
There's a difference between not playing very well and actually COVID protocols. I mean, but still, go on.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, we've got more of a sample size now with, you know, teams. I mean, look, John, the Saints played up in Washington a couple of weeks ago against the WFT, and there were 40,000 Saints fans in the stadium. So, I mean, there's a whole lot going on with that situation as well that, you know, you're well aware of is why people aren't showing up there. But, you know, there are some places now where the fans are just deciding, I've got better things to do with my time than go spend 3 hours in a stadium and parking and driving and all that other stuff that comes wrapped up with it.
Really? Are they in trouble, do you think?
No, I don't think they're in trouble. I just think it's, you know, it's just kind of what happens when teams start to lose. I mean, if you're 1-5 after six games, I mean, how much, you know, I mean, I know there's always the hardcore fans, you know, but yeah. Some people are just going to decide to do something else.
What's the highlights of this weekend's games, do you think? Just looking through a few of them. The Packers are playing Cardinals. Who else?
Yeah, the Bucks and the Saints on Sunday afternoon is a real big game in the NFC South. I mean, the big one really is this Thursday night game Packers and the Cardinals. I mean, yeah. You know, again, you know, those both, you know, the Cardinals are in first place in the NFC West, and they're out there with the Los Angeles Rams as the, you know, the top two teams really out there. San Francisco and Seattle have started to struggle, and then you've got the Packers, as we mentioned, you know, they've kind of starting to run away with the NFC North. The Bills are also a really good team. They're going to take on the Dolphins, a team they beat pretty badly a couple of weeks ago. One game that, you know, usually gets a lot of headlines is Pittsburgh and the Cleveland Browns. But the Steelers aren't as good as they have been in years past. Roethlisberger's
getting on in age, man. That's what it is.
Ben Roethlisberger looks really old. And the opposite end of that spectrum, you look at what the Cincinnati Bengals are doing, you know, with Joe Burrow. It's in his second year. He was injured last year. He has just looked phenomenal. He's throwing to one of his college teammates in Ja'Marr Chase. They seem to be taking the league over. They went to Baltimore last weekend and won 41-17, which was kind of a huge, huge win, you know?
Well, one thing is guaranteed. The Broncos are at Washington, and Washington will probably lose again. 2-5. They're god-awful. Really are.
Yeah, they're struggling with their quarterback situation still,
true.
You know.
A good defense. The people thought they'd make the playoffs. Just awful. Anyway, that's just my little penn-worth. Thanks for joining us. I in America. That is Jeff Shepherd. He'll be back with us on Game On here on 2FM next week. We're running in the dark with Mark Pollock after these. 2FM.
Game On 2FM. With Green Farm. Get back on track after summer with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
The annual Dark Run in the Dark returns this November for what will hopefully be its last time carried out in virtual format. Well, earlier I caught up with the founder, Mark Pollock, and began by asking him to tell us exactly what Run in the Dark is.
It's a global 5 and 10K. It's happening literally around the world. 25,000 people, as Dark just sweeps around the world, will be hitting the road to do a 5 or 10K. This year it's virtual, so everyone will be timing themselves on the Run in the Dark app and then going on to the global leaderboard or their team leaderboards so they can connect with each other digitally. But it's really a fundraiser for our charity Collaborative Cures, whose mission it is to cure paralysis in our lifetime.
Okay, just tell us about that. How did it come about?
Well, I'm blind, and I used to be a rower. And when I went blind, age 22, I kind of got back into rowing, and then became an adventure athlete and raced all around the world in deserts, mountains, and oceans. And I finally did a 43-day expedition race to the South Pole. And just when I was in sort of the top of the world, a year after that, I fell out a window and broke my back. So I spent 16 months in hospital, and friends set up Run in the Dark really to fundraise for a van and a lift in my house and to adapt the house. And then over time, it became clear that I needed and wanted to explore the possibility of creating a cure for paralysis. So over the last 10 years, Run in the Dark has helped me do that in a personal capacity, and now we're scaling that up through our charity Collaborative Cures to have more impact and move from projects worth €15 million and to scale that up to aim to create projects worth €100 million.
Yeah, and rather than sitting under it, Mark, and I never said this is easy, obviously having a spinal injury, you've offered your body up basically to medical science, haven't you?
I'm not a scientist or a technologist or an investor, so all I can bring to the party is my ability to turn up every day in the gym and train. So I kind of liken it to what I was doing with the expeditions. You know, you got to turn up and train, you got to form a team, you got to raise money, you got to tell the story, and then you got to do it all again. So I was really just bringing the skills that I learned in sport and adventure racing to this kind of longer term project to cure paralysis. So yeah, I've done a million and a half steps in my wearable robot, which powers me along with motors at the knees and the hips. And the important thing from a training perspective is we've been able to build, well, scientists and technologists have been able to build robots for years and years, but in fact for recovery, it was only whenever the robot started to do less in real time. So as I do more with my legs and my own muscles, the robot intelligently does less, and that gives a training effect over time, because it's no good if the robot's just doing everything for you. There's no training effect. But yeah, I've been walking in the robot, and we've put a robot into DCU, so lots of people can access that. It's not just me. And now we're, well, for the last number of years, we've been moving on to electrical stimulation of the spinal cord to help and promote voluntary movement in the paralyzed limbs. And that's in combination with the robot that allows me to move my legs.
It's fascinating stuff. It's 11 years now. Did you get held up by the pandemic last year? Was there an event last year?
No, we were able to run in the dark. Was going strong. We had to switch from, you know, 9,000 people gathering on the quays in Dublin, and nearly 3,000 in Cork, and similar up in Belfast, and smaller events all around Ireland and all around the world. We switched from that to this virtual format that lots of running events have been doing. But it was kind of interesting because we really only had timing for official events in Belfast, Dublin, Cork, London and Manchester at the time. And the Irish people running in Sydney or San Francisco or Singapore, they were just doing a fun run. But now with technology, everyone can time themselves and go onto a global leaderboard. So it's actually strangely kind of enhanced what the Run in the Dark is all about, and it really is connecting people right around the world. So if you're running in Dublin or Galway or wherever, you can compare your time with your mate in Brisbane or Melbourne or New York or Boston or wherever they may be.
Yeah, it returns in November. So it's November the 17th, is it? That's a Wednesday?
Wednesday evening, like it is every year, and it's a kind of, as darkness sweeps around the world, like New Year's Eve at 8 p.m. local time. Everyone will be starting their 5 or 10K. So hopefully people will see some flashing armbands as they're running around the streets wherever they are.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's up to you if you're taking part to, suppose, set up your own virtual way. You've got some good names, don't you? Sonia O'Sullivan's doing it. Jarrett Regan, the comedian. Ireland and Ulster scrum half, John Cooney. And Steve O'Timothy is also involved. He's been trying to get into the ring, hasn't he? Box against, what's his name? Paddy Barnes, isn't it? Paddy Barnes? And right. And also he's got to do this in a wheelchair as well. So he's not sitting on his backside either, is he?
No, that's right. No,
quite literally.
Loads of great support. And, you know, Sonia O'Sullivan's been supporting us for years. And when she was in the early days, she was involved in a little pop-up with about 50 or 60 people in Melbourne. So, you know, we have the sort of Olympic runner leading out the charge in Melbourne on the run, and her co-host of that event is a friend of ours called Kevin, who wouldn't run the length of himself, so he got the the hot dogs and the pints on the go in the pub ready for Sonia's glorious return with her 50 or 60 runners.
Sounds like my kind of man. All right, that fella.
Perfect combination.
Exactly. So if you want to get involved in this, Mark, 17th of November, tell us how people can get involved.
Yeah, people can go to runinthedark.org, sign up there, and then we'll give them an email with all the information that they need. But they get access to the app. There's a fitness hub there. They get a bandana, a flashing armband, and a medal. And, of course, they get the bragging rights on the virtual app.
And you're hoping to have, what, 25,000 people involved in this?
Yeah, 25,000 people right around the world. And, you know, it's really from the beginning. We only thought we'd have maybe like a four provinces thing in the beginning, but people right around the world just wanted to be involved in it. And it really does connect people from Asia to America and everywhere in between. So, it'll be a truly global event, and of course, loads of people in Ireland will be. Ireland has the most people, obviously.
But, yeah, sure. Run in the Dark has raised over €2 million for the last 11 years or so, which is an incredible amount of money as well. Is it a charity partner that you're handing this to, or is Run in the Dark a registered charity yourselves?
Yeah, Collaborative Cures is the charity partner, and that €2 million over the last 10 years has helped us create projects worth €15 million, and really what we're trying to do with Collaborative Cures is scale that 15 million up so that we speed up the translation from breakthrough research so that it actually gets to the clinic in 10 years rather than 50 years. And we think we can do that by removing all the unhealthy competition that seems to emerge whenever science and investment comes into play. So we're trying to create the conditions for collaboration so these projects can scale up to 100 million.
Sure. And what's your involvement this year? Have you any involvement at all yourself?
Well, my robotic legs have been locked up in Trinity for most of the last 18 months, but I'll be back in them to walk on the night on the 17th.
That's fantastic, Mark. Listen, thanks very much for joining us here on Game On. Give us that contact details again before we wrap it up.
Yeah, it's runinthedark.org, and it's the 17th of November. That's when the event's on.
Okay, Mark, listen, thanks for joining us here on Game On, and very best of luck with it, and hope you can get those 25,000 people involved and raise as much money as you possibly can.
And look, I should say the great thing this year with everything being virtual and postage and packaging, having to get the race packs out, Fastway Careers are helping us out this year to get the packs to everyone on time so they can wear their kit on the night. So thanks to Fastway.
Game on 2FM.
And thanks to Mark Pollock for joining us. Plenty of games in the English League Cup tonight. Burnley, Spurs, Leicester against Brighton, Preston against Liverpool, Stoke against Brentford. The big one, West Ham against Manchester City, all kick off at 7:45. But in the world of football, Adelaide United player Josh Cavallo has come out as gay, becoming only the first current top flight male professional footballer in the world to do so. Kind of contrast between the men and the women, because in the women's football there is quite a few who are openly gay. The 21-year-old wrote on social media that he was ready to speak about something personal that I'm finally comfortable to talk about in my life. And here's what he's been saying to Australian TV.
I'm very proud and happy to announce myself to be the first current active gay male professional footballer in the world. So I hope that by me doing this, I can inspire others in the future.
I am sure you will, Josh. Why do you think it is so hard for footballers to come out?
I think because everyone thinks you have to be physical, you have to be masculine. Now that there's an opportunity for myself to come out to the world, I do think that there's going to be other people in following my footsteps. I'll be very proud and honoured if I can help just one person out in the world that is struggling with the same thing that I did.
You've written about the darker times, though, over the last 6 years. Can you take me back to the night where you'd won the Rising Star Award? You should have been on this almighty high, and you got home and you just felt incredibly sad and alone.
I felt a feeling of numb, you know? I wasn't happy. I was sad, I was disappointed because it was such a great achievement to get. Yeah, football was amazing for me, but there was a whole nother aspect of my life no one knew about that was terrible. Something happened that night that it was time I said, you know what, I don't want to live like this anymore. I want to be myself, I want to be happy, just like everyone else.
6 years is such a long time for you to have to live a double life.
Yeah, look, it was very exhausting. I'm trying to perform at the best of my ability as well, so trying to live lies and come to training every day and make sure I give it my best. It was very difficult, it was very hard. I just mentioned to Carl today, my head coach at Adelaide, saying like after I told him I felt like I was so much lighter and on the pitch I could think freely, and it was just amazing. Like I never thought that this day would come.
Gosh, you're already an awesome player with this weight off your chest. Watch out, world.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this season and what I can bring to the team. You know, it's taking me to a new, different level, being able to think freely. So I'm very excited for the season ahead. It's only around the corner too, so it's perfect timing.
Well, good man, Josh, and welcome out. And, well, like his sexuality actually means a lot. Obviously, it means a lot to him, and it's great to see that he's actually out in the open finally. He will be the first of a few, I would say. Hope you enjoyed what you heard here on Game On here on 2FM. I'm John Kenny. Marie is back next week, but I have one more stint tomorrow night between 6 and 7 o'clock. We don't have a programme this coming Friday, so we've got a kind of a weekend feel to the show tomorrow. So Bernard Jackman's in studio on rugby, and we preview all the weekend's football. Hope you enjoyed what you heard. Tara Kumar is on the way.